As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Folks, welcome into Onto Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Going to talk Cubs at probably the most critical pivot point of the year. I mean, it feels like we've hit this spot a few times with them, which isn't to say that the previous moments weren't just as critical, because of course, we know there was a time earlier this year when things could have gone a totally different way. But I suppose as you get closer to the end of the season and in a wild card race where five teams are separated by a couple games, it's probably not unfair each day to be like, you know what, today is a really big day. Oh, nope, today is a really big day. The Cubs opened this Pirates series with a blowout win and a blowout loss. And we were just talking off air before the pod, you know, a lot of how you think about what this series is, I think, could shift a bit depending on how tonight's game, the series finale against the Pirates goes, particularly because you've got a team that's coming off this 2-8 stretch, terrible road trip, had been in the catbird seat, I believe that was Jed's term, but that's very appropriate to say. They were in a really good place, four games up in the second wildcard spot, you know, fell hard, and then came back, had an off day, and then a home stand against a couple bad teams. So it felt like if you're looking for a moment for it to be like, okay, but that's when they got it together and they did what they've done before this year and they turned it around, this was going to be the start of it. And I got to say, through these two games, I don't have much for people in that respect, because although the blowout win was certainly nice to see, Javi Assad looked better than he's looked the last couple times. I don't know that the command was still quite where you wanted it to be, but individual pitch-wise, there were some nasty pitches in there. And the Cubs have beaten up on some bad Pirates pitchers, which is good, probably good for the confidence. But I don't know how much it tells us about what the next 10 games are going to bring. So I'm kind of... and I left last night's loss, which I imagine we'll talk about, with some continuing concerns, particularly about the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I think there are some positives. Cody Bellinger is hitting the ball much harder than he was for about six or seven games. He looks better at the plate. It seemed like he was completely gassed, and I think that's a good sign. Ian Happ looks really good at the plate. I thought the offense in general, just to get back in that game, looked good. I know they left some men on base and could have made it even closer, but listen, they put up a ton of runs against the Pirates' best pitcher. I thought I thought the issue coming into that game was they just had this huge night, and now they're going to show no offensive fight against a really good against a pretty solid pitcher in Mitch Keller. They handled him well. He put the right lineup out there by, I think Miles Mastroboni, that's the exact guy you want to face, a guy that pounds fastballs up in the zone, and he showed why he was in the lineup. Kind of impressed by that, by just the fact that, I mean, when was the last time he had a start? I mean, he's barely played, and he goes out there cold and looks pretty good. That was a nice little, you know.
Speaking of going out there cold and having
Canario
a great night.
Did that against, you know, a pitcher with a 9 ERA and another back end bullpen guy for the Pirates. So that's I mean, that's good. But I mean, Mastroboni did it against an actual good starter.
We can say no. I would say too. I would add, people were so mad that Canario didn't start the second game. You know, he has a big night and then he sits, and oh, what, Miles Mastroboni's in the lineup? And even before that game happened last night, I was saying, well, it looks like a pretty bad matchup for Canario. It looks like a pretty good matchup for Mastroboni. The Cubs are missing two third basemen. That to me was completely sensible. So I was pleased to see that worked out
and
well, because I do think that
and
was
you
the
don't
right
want
call.
The defense of wisdom or morale in that situation with Steele. With Steele on the mound, right? Like, that's a thing. Like, I think we'll see him, like, we'll probably see Mastroboni start when Wicks starts. Maybe just in general, we'll see Mastroboni with righties on the mound. You know, I liked the offense. I don't know why, but I'm not, like, super terrified about Justin Steele. Like, those were clean hits. But they weren't rocket doubles in the gap or a ton of home runs going into the seats. I share your concern with the bullpen. I will say this. I slightly disagree with you on Mark Leiter. He didn't throw any splitters yesterday because he faced two lefties and they both swung at the first pitch. He just didn't get a chance to throw any splitters. I would go look at the splitters that he's thrown lately. Really good foul ball by Jiwon Bae and really good job by Corbin Carroll. He's just not getting the swing and miss. He's getting the chase. He's not getting the swing and miss for the last four starts. Go look at them, Brett. They go straight down. That's exactly what he wants.
But he's not getting. I've been watching it.
Uh-oh. I know.
We're gonna get hot again. I have been.
Take it to him, Brett.
My dude, I have been watching, and the reason he's not getting chase is because they're spitting on the ones that would get the whiffs. So that's
right,
why he's
but it's not
getting whiffs.
It's not that he doesn't have feel for the pitch. It's that they're like, oh, we're not. Like, I think it's more they've figured out, like, we're gonna spit on these. And I think a lot of them, like, go look at the Corbin Carroll at bat. That is a great job of fouling off some tip.
He did. He reached on, like, one.
That's a great job of fouling off. I don't think it's he's lost feel for the pitch.
We're still talking about, like, what has he got, three whiffs on the pitch in a month? And this was a pitch that had a 56%
right. This month
rate.
Has been...
come on. That doesn't...
No, I'm not saying,
like,
he didn't lose feel. He lost feel for it, but I think he's got it back, and now he just hasn't really had time to establish it. Like, he threw some nasty ones to Carroll.
I would look to see... I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure when it was really going for him, he would throw it righty on righty quite a bit. I don't think he was...
Yeah.
I don't think he was holstering that.
He would, but he wouldn't. But he wouldn't get as many whiffs on it.
I'm not sure I buy that last night he didn't throw it at all, his best pitch. He didn't throw it at all exclusively because, well, I just didn't have a chance because I was throwing I was in a 9-pitch at bat or whatever against a righty fouling off. I don't know. He had 13 pitches total.
Right. I mean, he threw 14.
Anyway,
he threw 14 splitters total in August against righties. 16 total against 16, 14, 13, and 19 was his high in April against righties. Like, he just doesn't throw it that much against righties.
But nevertheless,
it's still an issue. It's still an issue, and he gave up the two-run homer.
I wasn't looking at last night, and like
he gave up the homer to Connor Joe. Yeah, like, it was a bad outing. I'm just saying. I think that, like, the issue with the splitter is less of a concern than just the pure ineffectiveness right now. I think that's the biggest thing.
But he's in, okay, and that's like, fine. And I would say the only reason he's ineffective is because he doesn't have
maybe.
The splitter.
I think it's coming back though,
and I think know it, and I think they are just sitting on the other stuff.
I think they're able to.
If it's not even in your mind.
I think you're right in the sense that they're sitting on some other stuff. I think he's had some effective splitters lately, which he didn't for like 3 weeks, 2 weeks. I think the splitters looked better, but I'm just concerned about his overall pitching.
You are right. He's thrown some.
And I would say, if we can fight some more, that may not have been a high leverage situation, right, according to Fangraphs. That was absolutely a high leverage situation in David Ross's mind. Like, no doubt in my mind, he was trying to win that game.
Was it high?
He was looking at that.
Then he was wrong. If you thought that was high, okay, leverage,
it wasn't low leverage in his mind, because that's the sixth inning. The only pocket where there were lefties coming up, and he's trying to keep that game there. And then he was going to put Marcus Stroman in the game. That's what he was going to do. I'm telling you, if they kept it close,
even if you're right, then that's an indictment of David Ross, because Mark Leiter is not a high leverage pitcher right now. So, oops. It's one way or the other. Either it's a correct decision to put him in a spot that is, I would regard as low-ish, sixth inning, so three innings you're still going to have to cover in a two-run game that you're going to have to come back in. I'm not sure. Maybe I could go as high as medium, although, like you said, Fangraphs had it as solidly low. But even setting that aside, it's like, okay, if he thought that was high leverage, then you picked the wrong guy.
Who is he supposed to put? Luke Little?
Not that he's got great options.
Luke Little can't find the zone.
No, I'm saying,
Luke Little's not a high leverage pitcher. He's not even, like, he's a blowout pitcher right now.
If that's the high spot, then it's Marcus Stroman or it's Drew Smyley. As ridiculous as that is, that's the reality.
With the
right
lefties
now,
and the switch hitter coming up, I think I get putting in Leiter. He still trusts him.
The lefties that the splitter is supposed to be the pitch to take on, and the pitch he doesn't have.
I think he has it, though. I just disagree.
That's why
I'm even. It's going straight down. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. He's just not getting the chase.
You guys are arguing about a reliever the Cubs DFA'd and signed to a minor league deal and has performed far beyond anyone's expectations. Like, of course he's not quite all the way there in late September. Like, this game got so far out of hand because Justin Steele could not beat the Pittsburgh Pirates.
That's a fair point.
I don't want to pile on.
Terrible offense.
Justin Steele. He's been an absolute beast for this
team.
Offense. But, like, he's got to finish strong here. Like, if you are the ace, that's a game you win. And Sahiv and I were talking about this last night. You know, like, Jake Arrieta on September 22nd, 2015, throws a complete game shutout against Milwaukee. And that's the type of season that Justin Steele has had, that he's carried this team on his back and picked a really bad time to have his two worst starts of the year. And I don't really care about, like, his pitch characteristics right now. It's either you do it or you don't. And Sahadev had kind of the question on my mind, and I'm sure a lot of people's minds last night, like to Ross, of, are you seeing anything in these last two starts? And I get Ross isn't going to bury his player, and he wants to, you know, maintain this positive front. But he's like, well, you know, that Arizona start, and there, it was kind of like mis-execution on two pitches. Those two pitches wound up with three-run homers. Like, you can't give up six runs, the two biggest starts of the year, and think like everything is fine. And Brett, you wrote about it this morning, like this sinking feeling around the team. Part of it is because Steele has not come through in these last two games, and it's obviously not all on him. It's a team game. He's a fantastic pitcher. I think he can do this again next year and the year after that. It's not a, you know, not a doubting his talent, his fortitude, his patience, his perseverance, all of those things have been off the charts this year. And sure, you'd expect like some sort of a dip that, you know, he wasn't maybe going to be wire to wire like Cy Young front runner. Certainly no one expected that, but it's like there's only, you know, 10 games left in the season. The Cubs circle these Justin Steele starts as like, we have to win those games. And certainly all hope is not lost. But they're running out of, you know, it was just one of those nights. And that's kind of what Steele said last night.
There's no wiggle room right now. And I think the question is, do those games show signs of fatigue for Steele, or is it just like what you just said, Patrick, are these just one of those games? Are those just like, okay, those are just bad moments over the course of a season. Now, it's so easy to say that it's fatigue, right? Because it's coming two in a row at the end of the season. I'm not sure if I saw the signs of fatigue. He just didn't execute.
The velo.
Yeah, the stuff is there. So what are we talking about as far as signs of fatigue? I don't know. I don't know, like, if we're seeing those signs. And I think that's That's the question. I mean, Patrick's right. I feel like we, when Brett and I get into it, it's about like the smallest things about the most minute details of the team that aren't the most impactful, because Justin Steele not being effective is very impactful. So we're trying to, like, I think diagnosing whether that is a blip, whether he is fatiguing, or you know, what it is we need to figure that out. And I don't think we'll know until his next start, right? Like, if he gets, what is it? It's going to be Atlanta, right? So it's not going to be an easy outing either way. Like, that's just, that's going to be a tough start, whether it's, you know, May or September. It doesn't matter how fresh you are. You go up against that lineup, which, by the way, Atlanta hasn't put away number one seed because they keep losing. It may matter.
And the stupid Dodgers
won't
stop winning.
Right, so this series may matter.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Well, what one thing that we talk about when it comes to long losing streaks in baseball and avoiding them, there's a lot that goes into that. And we've talked about David Ross's perspective on how veterans can help, you know, gather guys and put a stop to those things because they stay day to day, they stay focused, you know, they don't let things accumulate and spiral. And we haven't really seen that this year for the Cubs outside of the stretch in May that was pretty darn easy to explain away just by, like, the hits weren't falling at the most impactful times, and it felt very fluky. And they were missing Cody Bellinger. There was a lot that was explicable at that time. And you look at this stretch now where they've lost 9 of 12 at a really critical time. The other thing that helps stop losing stretches like that is if you've got an ace that takes over games, and you know that's a win day. How many times we heard that expression, right? Win day. And there was a long stretch this year where Justin Steele starts. That felt like a win day. Didn't matter who he was facing. Didn't matter who the opposing pitcher was. It just felt like he was going to be a win. And I know that that was a feeling going into that start in Arizona. It was a feeling going into a start last night, particularly after the Cubs had won. It was like, okay, cool. And now they have Justin Steele. So this is good. And that isn't to say that I necessarily think he pitched poorly in either start. I think I could talk around the results. You know, six six earned runs is never good, particularly a short outing like last night. But like you guys have said, I'm not sure that the pitches looked all that bad. He was pretty dominant for the first three innings, and then sometimes you miss a spot a little bit, and then six batted balls happen to fall in, and it's like, things kind of deteriorate from there. But you can't really do that in late September. Like, nobody cares if you can explain away why these back-to-back starts from the ace were not concerning. Right. Because I think that's where I would land. I would say, I don't think these starts are concerning, but it still sucks.
They lost.
It still sucks that the two win days. Yeah, like, it just is a real bummer. And that, I think, with so few games remaining, is a big part of why I leave last night's game feeling so sour, because it's not that I'm worried about Justin Steele. It's not that I'm mad at Justin Steele. It's not that I don't think they would be in this position without Justin Steele. It's that it happened, and in a game they really needed to win with him on the mound, he didn't get the results that they needed, period, and that sucks.
Yeah, they scored 7 runs off Mitch Keller. You tell me that with Justin Steele on the mound, I say they win, right? And instead they got their butts kicked. Like, they lost by 6 runs. I still feel like this quickly washes away with the win tonight. So what you said at the start is I kind of agree with. Like, with the tenor of this podcast could completely change tomorrow morning with a win tonight. Because right now, I think what you need, and Jed said something about this, right? Like, you just need to win the series. Win the series. Win 4 series in a row.
Yeah, he said win 4 series.
And I don't think that's crazy, and I don't think that should be that hard. It feels like they're making it harder on themselves. I mean, like, I agree with a lot of what you just said, Brett, because I don't think I am concerned about Justin Steele, but it just doesn't matter. Like, he lost these last two games. And there are even things about the bullpen that I could point to and say, like, okay, nobody's really stepped up. I'm like, what's up with Hayden Wisniewski? Can he go an outing without giving up a run? Like Daniel Palencia is just so inconsistent. There are moments where I see him and I'm like, now that's that high leverage arm. Then the next time it's just like, what? This is not competitive. And then who's the third? Kwas. I mean, that hurt yesterday as well. Like, you keep that at 4-1 instead of 7-1. Ooh, it's such a different game. I think what you want to see tonight is build off the offense, continue to see the offense pile on, continue to see the offense score 5, 6, 7+ runs. If they can do that, you feel like, okay, go into the weekend against Colorado. I don't think Colorado has a pitcher that should be able to statistically put any fear into a lineup, so you should be feeling confident. But right now, right before this game, I just don't know where they're headed, and it's the way they've been playing just brings out so many questions. And I don't even know what is the biggest concern, right? It's like, well, yeah, I agree with you, Brett. Javier Assad got the results, but that's a bad Pirates lineup. And he looked a little shaky at times. There were some really hard hit balls. I'm concerned about him. Like I said, we just talked about Justin Steele. Jameson Taillon, we don't know what we're going to get. Kyle Hendricks can't flip a lineup over a third time. And like, even the second time, you start to get a little concerned. I trust Kyle Hendricks more than, you know, most pitchers around. But I'm still a little worried about him because there's a lot of hard contact that's starting to show up now. He's not missing as many barrels as he was, like a month or so ago. And Wicks, listen, I like Wicks a lot. I'm a little concerned about the lack of swing and miss. He got it the last start, but then he walked 4 guys too. So there's I'm just not totally feeling secure about that area. The bullpen's a question. And yes, like I said, the offense gave me a little bit of a confidence boost the last two games, but still, like, the way they looked for whatever that was, 10 games before that was concerning. So, I don't know. I don't know what, like, I think when you're concerned about all three aspects or not confident in all three aspects, what does that say? What does that tell us? So they're holding the playoff spot right now. None of these teams are terrifying that they're battling with. But you know, right now it's just win it, get in there somehow and hope you're healthy enough. I was just thinking about this. They could win and get in there. I'm pretty sure they're going to be facing Burns, Woodruff, Peralta to start the playoffs, and it could be a quick trip. Luckily, we won't have any flights to deal with, Patrick.
Yeah. You ready to just post up in Brookfield, Wisconsin for a bit there. But, yeah, I mean, unless, like, Justin Fields comes in as a media relations consultant for the Cubs overnight, like, Justin Steele's not going to sit there and be like, yeah, man, I'm tired. Like, just hit a wall, bro. Like, there's no, like, F it. I hit a wall.
It was coaching.
Yeah, it just,
coaching
it
was the issue for Justin Steele. Like,
but eventually teams kind of acknowledge certain truths that they can't in the moment. I mean, the 2015 Cubs totally hit a wall in the NLCS. They gave everything they possibly could to win 97 games, a wild card game, beating the Cardinals. And it was just like, they didn't really have much left to give. And I'm not saying that's exactly happening with Steele, but it's like, you know, can you come through in this moment or not? And that's just not him. It's all these phases of the game that we're talking about. Like, the Cubs, like, aren't exactly like passing the eye test with flying colors right now. And our colleague John Greenberg had a good Bears com today, like quoting John Fox, like, it's all a problem. And while the Cubs are a lot more competent than the Bears, like, all of these elements of the team right now are problematic. Like, I'm not really sure if there's like anything you can really hang your hat on other than defense, which kind of escaped them in Arizona. The base running has not been particularly sharp, but, you know, someone has to win that third wild card, and we can assess all this once the season does end. But I mean, all you're really asking here is to be better than the Marlins or the Reds and to win like 84-85 games. I mean, it's a really low bar to clear here, and if they don't, it'll just be just a huge disappointment.
Yeah, especially because in some respects, barring like a crazy winning stretch to end this year, it's already pretty disappointing in this regard. 2 weeks ago, if we're having this conversation, we're talking about the Cubs grabbing that playoff spot. Now it's kind of like, well, the other teams aren't great and they farted it away and the Cubs kind of got in by default. And I do think that is, it's an entirely plausible outcome. It is entirely plausible that the Cubs over these last 10 games go 5-5 and we have this same conversation four more times as we podcast. We're like, it's just not really looking great. And they still get in because the Reds and Marlins do the same thing, because those are very flawed teams. Those are not great teams. Whereas, you know, the Phillies, I think, are significantly better. I think the Diamondbacks have a little more and have had a little more upside. And obviously then the Braves and the Dodgers are on an entirely different planet. I still think the Brewers are frauds, for the record. I'm never gonna let that go. But I think they have shown that even in their whatever their fraudulent nature, they can win a lot of games. So I should give them credit in that respect. But it is funny that all of this could be pointing to a weird situation where the Brewers have nothing to play for in that final regular season series against the Cubs, and the Cubs have everything to play for, and then it's the very team that you're facing that gets to set itself up for maximum success in the first postseason round. And I'm just saying, that makes it less likely that the Cubs would win that postseason series. You know, imagine if the Cubs have to use Justin Steele on the final day of the regular season. That means he can't pitch in the wildcard series unless he goes on short rest, which I don't think he will. And whereas the Brewers would get to use their front three, and so the odds would be low. But it'd be a pretty nice story. It'd be a pretty nice tale if the Cubs went up there, got in the final three. This is something the Brewers would do to the Cubs. You know, go there. We remember this from 18. Go to their place, get into the playoffs, and then stay at their place and beat them in the playoffs. That would be a nice story. I'd like to write that.
You know what the narrative will be? Well, the Cubs were focused that whole time. They never let up. The Brewers let up because they'd clinched.
So, they got into rest mode.
So then they, you know, the Cubs were going the whole time, and Yeah, they weren't tired because they were running on adrenaline, and then they won that three game series. Perfect narrative. And when they and if they lose, it's, well, they were gassed, man, and they face those awesome pitchers. Yeah. So either way, we have our narratives written, so barely have to think about it now. it's hard to expound upon what we've already said. I think we've I was talking to someone yesterday, another media member, and it was like, where are fans going to place blame, or what did Jed Hoyer miss? What did David Ross miss? What players failed? And it's like, if they end up with 83-84 wins, they all nailed exactly what they thought this team was, right? Like, this team is what they thought, is exactly what they thought, right? Like, I don't think there's it's easy to say, like, you need to, I agree that we have to change expectations now, right? After what we've seen leading up to the deadline and post deadline, expectations need to change. But I don't think evaluation of the people in charge changes as much, because this is what the team is. And you can say, well, Jed didn't get enough at the deadline. I agree with that. But I think we know the reasons why that didn't happen. It wasn't because, this wasn't the go-all-in year. This isn't the go-all-in year yet. They just weren't going to go above the luxury tax. And I know people are going to fight about this, but there are baseball reasons for that. And it's just, they are where they are right now. And I'm not saying anybody should be satisfied with contention in September. That's not what I'm saying. And it shouldn't. You should be disappointed and ticked off if they don't make it. I think that's clear because of where they were 2 weeks ago, like, or even whatever, 10 days ago, whatever it was, where they were and where they are now. It's unacceptable for what's happened. But I think, and we can talk about this after the season, this really isn't a discussion for now, but like, when we have perspective in 2 weeks, if this season is over, I think we can talk about some different things. Talking about being in the catbird seat, I think they may be in that situation this winter. Like, they're going to be in a really good situation, and we'll talk about that another day. Right now we need to focus on this, and ultimately I'm the more we talk about it, the more shaky I think the position is, and the only thing I can go back to is that I don't think the Reds are good, and I don't think the Marlins are good. So there's a good chance that the Cubs can sneak into this, but I just don't know what, you know, it's going to take the random bounces of baseball for them to make any noise, I think, or just maybe something comes together, and maybe Alzolay and Fulmer are healthy by the end of the season, and you have this, I think maybe that's the best case scenario, right? Jamer comes back Sunday, Tuesday, whatever it may be. Fulmer and Alzolay come back for the playoffs. Stroman is able to go out there and give you innings, whatever it is. Like, there's various scenarios here where health and guys getting locked in help this team out. But right now it just feels very shaky and very unpredictable.
Just to circle back to stuff we talked about on the previous episode, I think Sahade would back me up on this. It's in talking with Jed Hoyer and listening to him and reading between the lines here, I think this is an executive who expected maybe not that 2-8, you know, collapse, but he thought there would be some sort of downturn. When he talks about the players' attitude and preparation as focus as A+ every single day, the thing that he goes to bed at night knowing about this team, clearly a strong endorsement of David Ross's leadership style. Walking into the Wrigley clubhouse this week, there was not a whole lot of angst, not even after last night's game. I mean, they have been very consistent, but 2 weeks ago, the Cubs had four pathways into the playoffs. It wasn't ridiculous to think they could chase down the Brewers. The Phillies were not wobbling, but they were within striking distance. And I mean, the Diamondbacks just blew their doors off. And now we're just kind of looking at maybe they get into the last wild card. And, you know, while I don't think, like, jobs are on the line right now, I think a lot of the discourse has been super overreactive, but like getting into the playoffs matter. And like, if they don't right now, it definitely changes the tenor of the offseason. I think there's a little more urgency, a little more pressure on them. I think that's something that David Ross has to wear. I think the trade deadline is something that Jed will have to wear, not in terms of like, you know, ownership is going to be like pounding the table demanding answers or quick solutions here, but like it just totally changes the tenor of when they report to spring training, of if they have a bad April next year. Like, we don't know if the Cubs even get home playoff games, but that made them millions of dollars in 2015, which went direct, some of which went directly into their baseball operations budget and changed Theo's whole conception of how they'd spend between the GM meetings and the winter meetings. I think getting into a playoff atmosphere and playing in those actual games would be usually beneficial to a lot of those young players that have not experienced it before. And like, if Dansby Swanson was in Jed Hoyer's ear the whole time of saying this isn't a, you know, a switch that you can flip on and off, then like, yeah, it's a really big deal if they make it. And if they don't, it's an even bigger deal.
Yeah, I think all of that tracks, particularly. I'm glad you touched on that last part, because I've had that in my mind throughout these last 2 weeks, Dansby Swanson's perspective that like winning is something that you live day to day. And there will be, if the Cubs, you know, fall backwards into the playoffs, you know, because the Marlins aren't great, because the Reds aren't great, there will be, that won't be perfect. You know, there will be things to discuss about that remain disappointing, but at least they will have that experience. And going into the offseason, I feel like there's something to being able to say, you know what, nobody expected us to do anything. We made the playoffs, and now we're building further from here. Like, this is a stepping stone. We've turned the page into a, quote, winning team, and now we're moving forward. And maybe that wouldn't actually mean anything in 2024. Maybe it wouldn't actually change anything, but like, I don't know. It sticks in my gut a little bit as I'm watching these games play out. So to that point, Cubs have 10 left. I think I'll take Jed Hoyer at his word that if they could win each of these series, I do think they're in. The math of that is pretty sound, but it won't be easy to do so. It starts with trying to beat the Pirates tonight, and then they've got the Rockies, who in theory are terrible, terrible, terrible on the road. So that should be a very winnable series. And then, meanwhile, let's just root for the Braves and root against the Dodgers the next few days, because that would potentially be pretty helpful for next week. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can read my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Patrick Mooney and Sahadev Sharma. Get theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you listening as always, and hope that you have a fun and safe and healthy weekend. Take care.